My name is Joy Warren. I live in Coventry and I'm a retired lady. I've been interested in water fluoridation since 2003, but it took me a year to be convinced that it was a really bad intervention by the government. I started off as executive director of National Pure Water Association, and I left that organisation in 2010 and started off with West Midlands Against Fluoridation, which I ran for about 7 years, and I'm now coordinator for the United Kingdom Freedom from Fluoride Alliance. And as I said, we're now going to be calling ourselves Fluoride Free Alliance UK. When I was investigating, I had already got myself a degree in environmental science. And when I first heard about fluoridation, when I went to a Friends of Earth meeting in Coventry, I didn't really believe what this lady was telling me. And I thought, well, no, she was very, very sincere. So I think I'll have a look and see what's going on here. So after a year, I decided that she was right. I was wrong to be doubtful. And it's been my life's work since then.
Okay, so most people come across fluoride when it comes to toothpaste. Surely, if it's something that's in toothpaste, it's not going to be bad for you.
Well, you're not supposed to swallow your toothpaste.
You can't help but swallow a little bit, can you, if you have a glass of water afterwards or whatever?
Well, you shouldn't. I mean, obviously, you want to rinse it around your mouth and spit it out, but you shouldn't actually rinse it out with water. And you certainly should not swallow it, because it is a toxin.
Well, surely they wouldn't put a toxin into... I mean, anything that goes into your mouth is not necessarily going to... You can't avoid ingesting it at some point.
For sure, especially for your young child who can't stop swallowing. And that's why children should only get a pea-sized amount of fluoridated toothpaste at the lowest concentration. But, you know, some children do swallow their toothpaste and they also swallow fluoridated top water. And the thing is, on the toothpaste carton, it says supervised brushing, implying they shouldn't swallow the toothpaste. But yes, we're all told we can swallow fluoridated water. It's fine.
Yeah, because for children particularly, I mean, this the whole point of toothpaste really is it tastes nice. The kids are bound to want to swallow a bit of it.
True. I'm not quite sure what flavours children's toothpaste is now. But of course, in America, it's really scrummy. It's really sickly and bubblegum tastes and things like that. Of course, they want to swallow it. And that's a bad thing. It's a complete contradiction, isn't it? You're not supposed to swallow it in America. If they swallow it in America, they've got to go to the Poison Control Centre.
Oh, gosh. Well, anyway, you say it's a toxin. What evidence is there for that? And what does it do?
Right, 400 research studies worldwide in the last 30 years, all pointing to a reduction in a child's intelligence. That's the worst thing that could happen to any parent. Have a child whose intelligence has been damaged by what they've been eating. And of course, it's not just the toothpaste, it's the fluoridated water. And it's encountered when the child is in the womb. Because mother's drinking fluoridated water, she's eating fluoridated foods, and she's also probably drinking tea. And tea has a lot of fluoride in it, because that's what's in the soil on which the tea plant grows in India and Kenya, Tanganyika.
Okay, so what is fluoride actually doing to you when it goes into your body?
Because it's extremely electronegative, it disrupts so many processes. We're not dead, of course, because we're not having too much. But if we have certain sensitivities, it'll probably target that particular part of our body which is weakest. And it's we know that it destroys enzymes. And we certainly know that it's antagonistic to iodide in the thyroid gland and the rest of the endocrine system. And that's the worst thing, of course, because children who are challenged when very young by fluoride have their endocrine systems messed about, especially if they're low on iodide.
So, how do they know? What's this iodide stuff?
Right, iodide is the essential mineral required for efficient endocrine thyroid function. But because of the law of halogens, fluoride displaces larger atoms in the halogen family, bromide, chloride, and iodide. And so basically, Fluoride, because it's the tiniest atom of a four, displaces all other three in the body. And that's bad news for the body, because those three, especially the chlorides and the iodide, are required for essential body systems.
Okay, so the reason we're having a chat is because the government is doing in Britain is trying to get more fluoride in our water. So what stage are we at the moment? Because I know there's been a battle over the decades to keep fluoride out of British water. And to what extent is it being added?
At the moment, we're still no more than 6 million people, and that's 10% of England, which it's been like that since
1985. How does anybody know if they're getting fluoride in their water?
Because you look on water companies' websites and you look for the water quality reports for your postcode, and then you can have a look and see if you've got fluoride. If you've got fluoride of less than 1 milligram, it may be that you are fluoridated. Sometimes they dilute the water to eke out supplies. But if you've got something like 0.4 milligram, that's natural fluoride. It means you're not artificially fluoridated.
Is there any simple way, sort of a map or whatever, to tell, you know, whether your part of the country's got fluoride or not?
Absolutely. Yes, there is. And you can get it from the British Fluoridation Society. And it's got patches of artificially fluoridated areas and patches of naturally fluoridated areas on it.
And are they pro-fluoride?
Yes, absolutely.
And who are these people?
They are dental researchers who are retired in the main. But they also have Alan Johnson, ex-MP, ex-Secretary of State for Health. They've got another Lord who is very, very, very good at asking questions in the House of Lords. They've got a few, as I say, retired dental public health people.
Right. Okay. So that's I'll put a link up to that on our show page at thisweek.org.uk, because I think it's quite important for people to know. Can you tell us a bit about the battles over the years to keep fluoride out of water and what arguments have been used? Where and why is it? Because it sounds a bit bizarre that we've got this kind of patchwork across the country.
It is a patchwork, but it hasn't advanced anywhere because of people like me, and more specifically, people in the National Pure Water Association, who did sterling work in the 80s, 90s and early 2000s. We've been battling. I mean, personally, I have been battling against fluoridation in Bedford's borough, central Bedfordshire, Hull, the northeast, that's Durham County, Northumbria, Sunderland, and South Tyneside. And we're now actually having a bit of a ding dong battle in West Cumbria. But the ones I've actually been involved with, we've won them all, although we never get the credit for it, because they just, we're not told why we didn't lose. We're not told why they didn't decide to go for fluoridation, because that would be tantamount to criticising their Public Health England employees.
Well, isn't that interesting? Isn't it? I find it absolutely fascinating that the authorities seem to want to do this unless people are awake, you know, like yourself, and trying to stop it somewhere. But they, of course, will be arguing, look, we're doing this from a public health point of view, and I'm sure they must have strong arguments. So what do you think is the real agenda? If this is actually bad for public health, why is this, pressure groups, MPs, Lords, etc., trying to force this down our throat?
Yes, I think it's something to do with the dental profession. The British Dental Association is very much in favour, and the British Fluoridation Society are their pals. We know at the moment there are quite a few dentists who've gone out of business because of COVID. Some are retiring early and some are retiring anyway, which means that there are not so many clinical placements for dental school students. So they can't complete their courses. That has a knock-on effect. You can't have as many placements in the dental schools because there's nowhere to put them when they're halfway through their course, which means there's going to be a reduction in the number of dentists in the next few years. So as a palliative, if you like. They think that perhaps they should fluoridate everybody. That means that they won't get so much decay. But unfortunately, that is, how can I say, smoke screen and mirrors situation, because fluoride added to drinking water does not really appreciably reduce dental decay. There's a huge survey in America in 1998, I think, 39,000 young people were looked at, and their fluoridation status was compared with their dental health. And they found that when they crunched the numbers, only 0.6 of the surface of a tooth had been saved because of the child's fluoridation status. So it's not very good.
Well, it's easy for you to say this, but, you know, and also very easy to say things like, oh, well, it slows down children's educational abilities. Is there any actual proof for that, though?
Well, this is 400 research studies throughout the world, starting off in China and then Iran, Mexico. And then now we've got these Canadian studies, which are really robust. And they followed mother-child pairings to see what happened to their intelligence. We know that the intelligence of the unborn child is affected, and the intelligence of the infant fed on fluoridated formula is affected. And they've worked out that for the level of fluoride added to drinking water in Canada, for example, which is 0.7 milligrams per litre of water, the intelligence reduces by 5 to 6 IQ points.
I wonder, water was privatised by Margaret Thatcher in the 1980s. Do you think that's made any difference to the way that this has gone?
Margaret Thatcher had a hand in legalising fluoridation in 1985, following a Scottish court decision where the judge, Lord Jauncey, said, "It's fluoridated water is a medicine. Full stop, it's a medicine." And that really panicked the Conservative government of the day. And Alan Clark and Margaret Thatcher got together and said, look, we're going to have to do something about this. And at that time, fluoride had been practiced in England for 30 years. 1955 was the first trial or demonstration of fluoride in drinking water, when nobody was asked if they wanted to drink it. And for 30 years after that, no one was asked at all, because the health authorities were saying, yeah, you know, we're going to do it. And they just did it, because they owned the water utilities at the time. So they could just draw a contract between themselves, as it were. So in 1985, the Conservative government panicked and said, look, you know, we've got to regularise the situation. For 30 years, it hasn't been enshrined in law. It's just a practice which has crept in, and we think we'd better legalise it. So they did. Now, the vote in Parliament, it was supposed to be an open vote, but we think it was a three-line whip. The final vote was something like 80 against legalising fluoridation, 160 in favour of legalising fluoridation, and 400 abstentions.
Crikey. I notice also, I mean, this is one of the, it's not really connected with fluoridation, but it's to do with water additives, is that just after the privatisation in July 1988, we had something called the Camelford water disaster, which many people have forgotten about, but that was down in Cornwall, and something like 20 tonnes of something called aluminium sulphate was accidentally added into the water supply, which was 3,000 times more than they were supposed to have. And there was all sorts of, well, hundreds of people had ill effects in this village of Camelford. So it doesn't sound to me as if the water supply is particularly well protected. I mean, this is something which it should just be water and nothing else.
I agree, it should only be water. And if it's only water and nothing added, then it is drinking water. Of course, the aluminium sulphate is there to, dare I say the word, flocculate off all the impurities in the raw water, so that then it comes out the other end of the water treatment works. It's pure potable water, and that's how it should be. Everything is taken out, but nothing is added apart from chlorine, which is there definitely to kill bacteria and pathogens. Now, the problem is that it's drinking water if it's treated properly, and most of the country has proper treated water with nothing added apart from chlorine. But in the fluoridated areas, we then have a soup of acid added, which then converts it into a medicine. Therefore, it's not drinking water. Now, the smoke screen and mirrors thing here again is that it's a neat trick. Government and the MHRA, or the Medicines Healthcare Regulatory Products Agency, which award licenses for medicines, they do not admit to it being a medicine, even though it's clearly stated in the British standard, which controls the quality of the fluoridating acid, that it is added to increase the resistance of consumers to dental decay. So it's got to be a medicine. And in fact, when you look at the drinking water directive, medicinal waters are not drinking waters. So in two counts, fluoridated water is definitely not drinking water. It's very important to have that point, because drinking water's quality standards have a certain amount, maximum, of all the different chemicals that can occur in raw water before it's treated. And obviously when the fluoridating acid is added. But in this case, if it's not drinking water, we're not protected by the drinking water quality standards. So any amount of contaminants is too much. Now, the trick is to try and get the governments and the MHRA and the NHS to accept that the stuff is added in order to treat humans. And that's such a bad thing, because we haven't given our consent ever, and we've never been asked.
Gosh, there's a similar sort of thing going on with vaccines at the moment. You know, the idea that people are being given, they don't really have informed consent about what is the side effects, for example, of a vaccine that's in experimental stages. Anyway, so what's the... because various different parts of the country have different water. I mean, you know, I think most people who visit London or live in London know that the water in London is different to other parts of the country. Isn't that right?
The rumour is that it goes through your body 12 times before you die. Yeah. Water in London is not fluoridated. And some places it's natural fluoride, which is calcium fluoride. And the highest in the country is 1.9 milligrams, which is almost twice as much as added to our drinking water. And that's calcium, that's actually, it's magnesium fluoride, and that's in Hartlepool up on the northeast coast. It's diluted down to 1.3 because the maximum allowable is 1.5. And then the further south you go, into Essex, there are pockets of fluoride, which is 0.5, 0.6, 0.7. But London doesn't have any fluoride in its water at all. It all depends on what the ground is like. Groundwater gives rise to water which is extracted. And if it's a fluorine-rich rock, then you're going to get fluorine in the drinking water. So, yeah, London is different because it's pretty pure, really, as far as raw water is concerned.
So do you know, I mean, it's a cheeky question, really, but do you know whereabouts in the country we have the best drinking water?
Oh, that is a very tricky question, yes. There's a lovely spring in Lechfield called Chase Water, which is really nice, but they bottle it. It's not actually on the public supply. Lots of groundwaters are brilliant. Scottish groundwater is lovely. Welsh is a little bit of fluoride, but not too much. I'd say it varies. It all depends on the geology of the area. As far as public water is concerned, it's difficult to say, really. They're all supposed to follow the guidelines, and they're all supposed to treat it exactly the same wherever they are.
Well, I mean, I'm going to guess that the best unfluoridated water you'll find in some sort of mountainous region, I don't know, like Cumbria, the Brecon Beacons, or the Highlands, or somewhere like that.
The Highlands, I'd say.
The other thing is, ever since privatisation, I've spoken to people in the business, and the aquifers have been going down. That's what I've been told since the privatisation of water. There's a lot more actual water being abstracted from the aquifers. So this might explain why some of our streams are slowly drying up.
There's also abstraction by farmers, but the DEFRA is really very, very strict on abstraction. They maintain the levels of the reservoirs and do not abstract from the aquifers too much. They're aware that you cannot deplete the water in the aquifer. Not That's not the case in America, where so much being taken out of the ground, the aquifers are sort of not quite drying up, but they're very depleted indeed. Now, we have strict control over abstraction from aquifers.
Well, you say that, but I mean, if you go through, quite a few towns, that the actual, if it's a, you know, reasonably small river, you quite often find that it's very low. I know just one in anecdotally in Cirencester, that I, over the last 20, 30 years, I've been walking along there slowly but surely, the levels have gone down. And now it's kind of just mud and a few reeds. I mean, surely this isn't really looking after our water levels and our water table. Or maybe this is something to do with climate change.
Who knows? But if you see a river like that and you're really concerned, you need to talk to DEFRA and say, what's happening to this river? Why is it so low? And only if a concerned person goes along and says, please do something about it, then they will do something. Unfortunately, in many cases, drinking water companies are self-regulating. They're supposed to follow the rules, and they probably do. There are some spills and tears before bedtime, as it were. But I think DEFRA lets them get on with it. And as does the Drinking Water Inspectorate. They don't have enough people to go around the country to check on all the levels of chemicals and things. The water companies do their own self-testing.
Ofwat is another one, isn't it? They do a regulation of the water companies. I remember that we had I had somebody from Bristol Water here on the radio here in Bristol a few years ago, and that just literally the day before, they had been told by Ofwat that they were charging more than anyone else in the country, and they were being told that they had to bring their actual rates down, but they didn't say anything at the time about fluoridation. I just wondered, could you just leave our listeners with an idea of, if they're concerned about this, where's the best place to go, either online or, you know, you may even be meeting in person, who knows?
Maybe indeed. Right, so if people think they're fluoridated, they need to check the water quality reports of their water company, which is quite simple to do. Put the name of the water company in your search engine and then say water quality reports, and you'll come across to see how much fluoride there is actually. And you're looking at the minimum, average and maximum. And if it's anywhere near 1 milligram, then they're artificially fluoridated. The map of England's fluoridated areas is easy to access, British Fluoridation Society. Coverage of fluoride, as it were. They'll find it eventually. What can they do? At the moment, we're advocating writing to the Public Bill Committee, which is going through the healthcare bill line by line, and we're going to get to fluoridation in around about mid-October. I've got a template letter prepared on the website. And that can be sent to the Public Bill Committee asking for the two fluoridation clauses to be removed and the following reasons, which will be very cogent and have references. They should send that letter also to their MP. Parliament's not going to do anything unless people say they don't want it. That's so simple. If you're not fluoridated at the moment and you know it's a bad thing, you need to tell somebody that you object to having this forced on you.
Mm. So if this bill goes through, when can we expect to get fluoridation? I mean, I'm guessing this will go right across the country.
That was the intention of Matt Hancock on the 16th of March at the Select Committee oral evidence session. In his case, it was not evidence. It was just gobbledygook. But the second question he was asked was by one of the Select Committee members. And the question was, and the intention is to roll it out across England. And the answer, a chilling answer, was yes. We're really worried because now we've got Sajid Javid, and he hasn't shown no intention of changing that particular ambition. It's really bad news. People do not deserve this to have happened to them, especially after they're still reeling from the effects of COVID. The stupid thing is that fluoride does not prevent dental decay. It delays it for a little while. Now, get back to the endocrine system and growth and how thyroid gland is one of the most important glands in our bodies. Well, it controls metabolism. And if your thyroid gland, when you're a little child, if it's poisoned by fluoride and it's not working as well, lots of things slow down. And the one thing that can slow down is the growth, the eruption of teeth. Now, we can't show this at the moment because there's so much fluoride around. But in the 1940s in America, before this stuff took off, they could see that one fluoridated population, their teeth were quite good, primary teeth, that was. But as time went by, the teeth became decayed, and the decay caught up with the non-fluoridated control groups in the trials and in other places in America. It's a theory that's never been admitted to by anybody in government or in the dental profession, but we have lots of information on it, and there's a good file document on the internet by a lady called Carol Clinch, C-L-I-N-C-H, which gives you a full list of all the research done on this issue. Right, so I mean, you're thinking about if it is pushed out throughout UK, we don't deserve that. It's really bad news, and they're just not listening to all the good stuff from us that shows that it's a really bad, dangerous intervention.
I mean, the worst comes to the worst. Can you get a kind of, one of these filter jugs in your kitchen, so that at least the water that's going into your kettle for your tea is not fluoridated?
That's avoidance. And you know, personally, I would say if you don't want it, you have to fight as well as avoid. The first thing you do is fight and avoid. But there you go. If we've lost and it's now in your drinking water, get yourself a filter. Now you can get something that's plugged into your pipe, which is called reverse osmosis. It goes under the sink and it's got a reservoir.
Oh, right. So this isn't a jug. You could actually have to fit something to your pipe to then remove the fluoride from the water.
Yes, that's right. You can do that easily. It's about £100 plus the filters and membranes, and they have to be changed every now and then, which means getting down under the sink and pulling everything out of the cupboard and then changing your filters and membrane. Filters are changed more often than the membrane. And in fact, you change your filters to protect the membrane. When you filter your water with reverse osmosis, you're losing about 3 to 4 litres of water for every litre of water you're purifying, the product water. Now, that's really bad news because we shouldn't be wasting water. But hey, we have to protect our health. Now, it's not legal to have reverse osmosis under the sink because you shouldn't interfere with anything to do with the in-pipe. However, I suspect no water company would take anybody to court for having reverse osmosis attached to their sink. I'm convinced of that. In fact, I've been to a conference with water techies, and I think I was the only one in the room who wasn't anything to do with the water industry as such. And at the end, I asked a question about reverse osmosis filters. How would you feel about having these attached to taps? And is it something you're concerned about? And the answer was, I said, well, I'm standing up here now telling you that I'm breaking the law by having reverse osmosis on my sink in pipe. What are you going to do about it? they didn't do anything to me at all, and I still haven't been to court, unfortunately.
Oh, right, actually, no, so you actually want to go to court in order to prove the point, I suppose. That's so who, you know, if people want to get one of these to stop the fluoride in their water, who would you call? You call your local plumber?
No, there are special companies on the internet. Just look up reverse osmosis filtration systems. There's quite a few of them in the country, and the more people who become fluoridated, the more they'll sell. Now, there's another one, which is a desktop reverse osmosis, which is less inconvenient and better for you if you rent your house. Because if you've got a landlord, he's not going to want you messing about with the in-pipe.
I bet he won't know.
Yeah, but he will if you leave the house and take it with you.
Well, he might not even know. Well, I suppose he might if there's water all over the floor. What about a jug? Will a jug filter fluoride out?
There's one which I think is quite good, but I have never yet tested it, and I haven't analysed the product water, and it's called Zero, Z-E-R-O. People who've got it say it's okay, but they don't have the analysis equipment that I have. But I'd say the other thing is a distiller, which is like a dirty big kettle, and you make about 3 litres at a time. But that's quite expensive on electricity because it runs for about 4 hours. The other thing you can use is Brita's. No, not British, sorry. That's the one you don't want. Berkey, big Berkey. That takes up a lot of room on the floor. A big, tall, jobby, stainless steel. And it has, it does actually remove fluoride and other contaminants. I'd say you keep away from any jug filter where the water goes through very quickly, because that means it's not taking out the fluoride. But zero doesn't pass the water through very quickly. So we believe that's quite a good one.
And I suppose, you know, the other thing is maybe bottled water.
Oh, yes, bottled water. I mean, it's really quite inexpensive. It's not very good for petrol miles, is it? You know, you get 5-litre bottles from Sainsbury's and Tesco's. That's Caledonian and Ashbeck. Both are really good water.
Ah, amazing. Well, can you just remind us of your website and your organisation? And I understand there's a sort of there are organisations all around the world trying to stop fluoridisation.
Correct. But we've got quite a few local groups, and they are belonging to the Alliance, which I run. So the website is www.ukfffa.org.uk. Well, I normally say UK triple FA. It's much easier to say. So it's UKFFFA.org.uk. And we're changing our name to Fluoride Free Alliance UK gradually. Now, on that website, there's a resources page. The main resources page, a third entry down, starts people looking at how they can remonstrate to the Public Bill Committee, which is meeting at the moment. And the link goes to a template letter, which they can adapt if they want to. And it's just please asking them to remove those two clauses from the bill, which tying us up, because the Department of Health wants to take over fluoridation lock, stock and barrel. And they even want to alter the current contracts, which have been varied. And if they've been varied enough, it means people should be allowed a public consultation. But I think the aim is not to allow you to get that far. They'll change the contracts before they allow even think about public consultations.
I mean, you know, Joy, there is a bit of a sinister side to this, isn't there? Because, I mean, I as a journalist can tell you categorically that there are definite efforts to keep the public stupid, you know, but through dumbing people down. You know, this is literally big organizations, powerful organizations, influencing particularly the national press, the London media, to, you know, literally bamboozle people with complete nonsense stories, or else keeping stories out of the news using legal threats and this sort of thing, and literally, you know, sometimes even buying up an entire media outlet so that it can be controlled. And I mean, you know, what you're saying about the fluoride is that it actually may be making people stupid, which concerns me. Do you think that there's a sinister side to this?
I have to be really scientific, and I can't entertain too many conspiracy theories. I know there's an agenda, because ever since 1955 in this country, the law has been tightening gradually over the decades. There's something not quite right in the state of Denmark, or in the state of UK in this case. But, you know, it could be many different actors all having a say and all pushing the agenda. And the Secretary of State presumably is piggy in the middle, because, you know, he knows diddly squat about this. He just does what his advisors tell him to do. And if advisors are dental researchers or dental experts or Public Health England consultants in dentistry, then he hasn't got much of a say. You know, all he could do would be to follow his own conscience. Well, that's not going to happen anytime soon, I feel. So they're just listening to what the experts say.
I'm not so sure ministers have a conscience.
No comment.
Anyway, look, Joy Warren from the UK Treble FA, thanks very much for joining us.
Oh, thank you, Tony.